Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined once again by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. How's it going, boys?
Colin, I consulted the vibesometer before we started recording. Last week, we declared that the vibes are weird. Right now, the vibes are just bad.
Yeah.
They're not as weird as last week, though.
Yeah,
last week, the vibes were like weird, and now they've like stabilized and they're normal.
At least we've identified the source of the negativity going into this week, whereas last week everything just kind of felt odd.
I think last week the skeptics were all just not the skeptics were pointing things out and saying, "Hey, like we got to be careful here," and people were like, "You're ruining fun," etc. And it was like this will balance out over the season and eventually you will see. And to no one's excitement, it took a day, 2 days for, you know, it's now 3 and 4 that they've lost. And it's like, hey, those problems that you'll never believe this, but like beating Newcastle didn't solve are biting us in the ass.
Yeah. And, just to confirm, in the last podcast, Nathan did criticize stan culture, not fan culture. Because as many know, none of us three are professionally paid for doing this and are doing this because we're fans and we want to. So our contribution to fan culture is not openly criticizing fan culture.
Oh, you're not getting paid for this, Colin?
Well, I mean,
hate to break that to you, bud.
I said professionally paid. We can get hobby paid.
Hey, we can put this on the resume, bro. Like, it still counts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, stan culture is dumb.
Yeah. That point, we really want to drive home. We got a lot of replies to our episode last week.
But, like, it's just, it's taken on a life of its own.
Like,
15 years later.
Did you say song?
Yeah. Stan culture comes from the song.
By Eminem?
Yeah, that's where it comes from, Colin.
Colin, I know you're a young, but like, come on.
The song is called Stan. It's about a fan who is just obsessed with Eminem, and that is what to stan someone means, is to show the love of what Stan showed towards Eminem, the obsession towards something else. So if I was a Nathan stan, then I would just be showing that love and obsession with Nathan.
I guess I just never took the time to look up the history of that word. I'm not Eminem
Marshall Mathers
listener,
LP, bro.
So, yeah. Wow. I guess you just learn something new every day.
Yeah, I mean, that album probably came out in the year of your birth, so, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah, I'm glad we're doing this while recording, too, so that everyone can know how clueless I've been about this the entire time. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if we're going to stan anything, though, it's going to be Paulie doing shirtless podcasts now. The new standard has been set.
That's right. We really need a clip from this podcast that's worthy of clipping a video of and posting on social media.
First of all, no. Second of all, if I could always put something on, because as the manager proved on Saturday, which is part of why the vibes aren't good, is you could change your wardrobe at halftime.
Yes.
That's true. So I guess we'll evaluate this podcast at the end and determine whether or not Polly needs to wear a shirt or not in future podcasts. Yep. So the Aston Villa loss. Initial reactions were obviously vibes bad. We had, I think people have been saying, 27 chances. And I think XG was something like 1.3, despite having 27 chances.
1.5.
Okay, 1.5. Off the top of my head, the only really good chances that I can remember are Greenwood going forward. People were kind of frustrated he didn't pass to Ronaldo, even though Ronaldo was offside on one of those chances.
He's infallible, Colin. Come on.
Right.
Which one was he offside on?
I think it was the one where Greenwood cut in and Ronaldo made a run to the right. And by the time Greenwood had the opportunity to either shoot or pass.
I mean, he had Ronaldo overlapped him and he had a very easy layoff to Ronaldo where, and if you now granted Mason Greenwood doesn't get to slow it down and watch it in half the speed, but if you take a still frame, at no point did any of those defenders ever even look at Cristiano Ronaldo. And then the same thing happened. A few minutes later, Greenwood got a chance at the edge of the box, and there's like seven Villa defenders in the box, and Bruno Fernandes is there. Now, Juan Bissaka is there, so I understand why you're not going to look at him, but Bruno Fernandes is there, and Cristiano Ronaldo was there, and not one defender even pays notice to Bruno Fernandes or Cristiano Ronaldo. The only thing they're looking at is Mason Greenwood because they knew he was not going to pass the ball.
And
like we talked about this at the beginning of last season, that like he needs to cut this out of his game.
Yeah, and something that it seemed like had become a better part of his game too over the end of last season and the beginning of this one. You know, picking out a pass. Do we think that maybe now is the time to have Jadon Sancho as the regular starter instead of Mason Greenwood? Because it seems like Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be the striker. That's just something that is the new world we're living in. Maybe Greenwood can come in and compete for that position when Ronaldo needs a break, whenever that will be. But right now, if we're going to have somebody who is that not involved in build-up play, does it not make sense to provide yourself with more natural wingers who specialize in creating opportunities?
Yeah, I would agree. That's we kind of talked about this last week when we were just talking about why vibes were weird and as it relates to CR7. And part of the problem that we ran into was when you sign a guy like that, Ollie's hand is forced when it comes to trying to, you know, build out what the starting 11 is going to be. His name's written on permanent marker. So then you got to figure out if that guy is the spearhead for your offense, how do you, and that's the guy that you're expecting the offense to run through, you have to set it up for success. And I think, as we know, he needs service. And when we saw Greenwood be selfish, because he's been coached by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer now for the last 2 years, and Ollie wanted his forwards to get a little bit more selfish, maybe he went a little too far in that regard. Sancho is the answer one on that side. He's the reason why we bought him. And then you need that creativity, and honestly, I mean, you need Sancho to start playing so that way he's getting regular minutes and he's actually getting bled into the team. So that way I would like us to let him get comfortable and, you know, ease his way into the team. So that way we don't have ourselves in a situation in a couple months where it's almost like Donny van de Beek, where it's like, would Sancho going to get a game? And then that's just a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, Nathan, you're a little bit nicer on some players here than I am. Because I think, yes, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is openly talked about with Greenwood.
Nice guy.
And Rashford and Martial, the desire that he wants them to be selfish and ruthless in front of goal and always thinking about scoring goals. But he has also talked about how he wants a dynamic, fluid front three and or front four when you include Bruno Fernandes, and how he doesn't want Greenwood. He talked about this after the first game. He doesn't want Greenwood to just become that number nine. He wants him to be like a more well-rounded forward. And that comes with you have to, yes, have that streak in you where you're always looking to score, but you have to think what's the best way to score. And we talked about this at the beginning of the season, is Greenwood gets the ball at the edge of the box and teams would collapse four guys on him because they knew he wasn't going to pass. And they'd leave Rashford wide open and they'd leave Cavani and Fernandes wide open. And all it takes is you slipping a few of those passes in to suddenly everybody going, well, we can double him, but we can't triple and quadruple team him. But I do think there's now, look, I wrote about this today, Colin, you'll get it later. And, it'll be up there. I think that one of the dumbest things people do is like they see something and then they put out the hashtag like the so-and-so effect, of United having given up a set piece goal, the Eric Ramsey effect. Like, it's been five games. Relax, people. And guess what? We'll get to that. The Ronaldo effect. Like, oh, Ronaldo's going to come and bring professionalism and a work ethic to the dressing room. Like, you said that about Bruno Fernandes, and you said that about Edinson Cavani. So what happened there? Do we not have it? Like, did Bruno Fernandes and Edinson Cavani just say, whoa, it's a childlike atmosphere in this dressing room, and I'd rather do that than do the thing that I've been doing my whole career? Or is it like they're coming in and just being their professional selves in a very professional dressing room? Like, not everything is down to one person. And that's, but that's not to say, you know, the Zlatan Ibrahimovic effect did not turn Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial into goal scorers. That's not to say that there aren't other effects and that they don't directly influence certain things, but not everything is positive either. And I'm looking at, as Nathan says, you've been managed by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for a long time. And now you get Cristiano Ronaldo, who is this ruthless goal scorer, coming in and being like, well, if you want to be this ruthless goal scorer, you have to be selfish and you have to always be thinking about scoring goals. And Mason Greenwood watches against West Ham. Scott McTominay plays a perfect through ball to Ronaldo where all he has to do is hit it across the box and Mason Greenwood taps it in. And there were a few other times where Mason Greenwood was open and Ronaldo's not giving him the ball. And Ronaldo leads the team in shots against West Ham, didn't create a single shot for his teammates from open play. So in your head now, you're being like, well, if I want to get to the level that Cristiano Ronaldo is that in your head? Like, yeah, it's only been 1 week and that I'm not being definitive here, but it's certainly worth to say, like, is Mason Greenwood looking at things like that and being like, I need to be selfish, Cristiano, when I get into goal scoring situations, I have to be thinking only of scoring a goal, because a week later, Greenwood leads the team in shots. He takes eight shots, none of which are particularly good. He took a lot of incredibly dumb ones, and he only set up two shots for his teammates from open play. And as a winger, that's really bad. And it's really bad when Ronaldo's doing the same thing in the same team. You can't, especially the way this team is built, you cannot now have two incredibly selfish players, because then that leads to Bruno Fernandes goes, well, you aren't passing, so I got to get mine when I have the ball. And Paul Pogba goes, well, nobody's passing, so when I have the ball, I'm going to do it myself. That's really, it just seemed like Greenwood had that attitude of like, you're not going to pass to me, so when the ball comes to me, like, I got to take it myself, because that's how I'm going to get mine. And yeah, that's a Ronaldo effect. And then who knows, Bruno Fernandes, the first time he's taking a penalty with Cristiano Ronaldo looking over his shoulder, decides to alter his run-up and send it out to the moon. Like, is that in the back of his mind? So, like, is there a Cristiano Ronaldo effect for this team? Yeah, sure. And there are very good things that he has done, but, like, against Newcastle, basically, his presence basically causing a goalkeeper to be unsure of himself and to make some mistakes, and United are able to open the floodgates because of that. It's not as good when you have it, when you're basically doing the same thing, but this week you run up against a goalkeeper who's not queuing up to, you know, gift you a goal as the four previous or the three previous goalkeepers Ronaldo has faced have done. So there is an effect. Some of it's good, some of it maybe not so good. And that's now what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has to manage.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that we saw too was just the lack of efficiency, and because the shot economy was there. There was plenty of opportunities for Manchester United to score on Aston Villa, but they never put themselves in the right positions to score. It seemed like they were doing 9 out of the 10 things that you need to do to score a goal right. But then you look at kind of the stats that, like, I've got who scored pulled up right now. Tyrone Mings has 4 block shots. Ezri Konsa has 3 block shots. Courtney Howza had 2 block shots. Matt Cash, John McGinn, and Danny Ings all had 1 block shot. So you're looking at double-digit block shots, and United had 28 shots in total, but only managed 1 more shot on target than Aston Villa did. So whether it's they're missing that final pass that needed to happen to unlock that shot, whether it was frustration, which certainly once you got towards, the end of the game, more and more shots are just kind of getting kicked at whomever, trying to see if it can find the way into the back of the net. I think there was just too much anxiousness as that game continued to be nil-nil. And that's how we found ourselves in this situation where Aston Villa just needed one opportunity to take advantage, and they did.
Right. See, but like Nathan's bringing it up, and the shot volume's there, but they weren't good shots. As Colin said, Mason Greenwood took a lot of shots, and his best ones weren't good. His best one was probably the one in 7 minutes into the game where he put it on his right foot and scuffed it when he had a wide open pass to a wide open Bruno Fernandes. And that was the first time I said, he's thinking about that through ball where Ronaldo didn't give it to him. And it's like, okay, you took your chance, now go back to playing. But he never did that. And it never came to, and someone after the game, because none of this was surprising to me as I watched the game. Like, and when we went to halftime, it was like, hey, we're taking a lot of shots in this match. None of them have been good, and it's never looked like we're going to score. It wasn't like Villa were doing a superhuman thing blocking all those shots. It was Tyrone Mings standing in, getting himself in position, squaring up for the shot, and United being like, I'm going to shoot this anyway. And there was in the first half, there was a corner where the ball rolled out to Mason Greenwood. And there was just a man right in front of it. Like, all he has to do is take a touch to his right or his left, which would change everything and probably result in the player having too much momentum that they just take him out and he wins a penalty. And he just shoots, and it obviously goes right into this man because he blocked the entire angle. But had he not been there, there are five Villa players between the ball and the goalkeeper. And this happened with Ronaldo, and this happened with Pogba, and this happened with Fernandes. They just kept shooting, and there was no idea in the final third. And part of that is because it was a weird game in that it was very open and very back and forth. And usually if you come to Old Trafford and do that, especially in the last 2 years, maybe not under Mourinho or Van Gaal or Moyes, but under Sir Alex Ferguson and under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, if you came to Manchester United and you played that way, you got picked apart because United would run you off the pitch. But they didn't have their runners on the field. Martial's not in there, and granted, he shouldn't be. He's been terrible recently. Marcus Rashford's not in there. He's hurt. Jadon Sancho's just on the bench. You have Mason Greenwood, who is not good at running the break. He's good at, once you get him the ball down on the break, you make the final pass to Mason Greenwood, and he'll put it in the net, but don't let him quarterback that thing. Not good at that.
And I want to take this opportunity to kind of transition to another part of the match that we should talk about. Luke Shaw gets lost half an hour into this game, and
huge,
he's another huge issue. Avenue forward for Manchester United. Both he and Maguire left with injuries in this one, which kind of upset the balance of the team mid-game. But this was a game where Manchester United, again, couldn't really create meaningful chances, but also, again, never really looked terrible defensively either.
But they never looked solid.
Yeah.
They never had control of this match. And I tweeted it when Luke Shaw went out. I said, this is a big problem. And that's when I really kind of lost faith that we were going to win this. And I was like, you know, maybe we'll scrounge out a goal and win this 1-0. United had 11 shots in the first 33 minutes when Shaw was on the pitch. And they took four between them and between when Shaw got left and halftime, and all of them were on set pieces. And then it took them 16 minutes in the second half to get another shot. Like, that's, and Luke Shaw created four of those shots. Diogo Dalot didn't create any. Like, they lost an entire outlet point right there. And part of the reason that Pogba on the left wing works is because he's coming inside as an extra central midfielder, and Luke Shaw is your left wing, but you lose that with Diogo Dalot. So one of your wingers is now Dalot, who is a right footer on the left side with no left footed overlap option there. And your other winger is Mason Greenwood, who's coming inside to play centrally, who's only looking for goals and not looking for creativity. And the overlap option there is Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And the midfielder on that side is Scott McTominay. And where are you getting your width from? And this is where, yes, it sucked that you had to make two substitutions for defenders. But the third substitution that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer chose to make made absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cavani for McTominay with, what was it, 15 minutes left to go. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to have Ronaldo, Greenwood, and Cavani on the pitch at the same time to close this one out.
It was a back and forth match where United had no control in midfield, and Philip didn't. Douglas Luiz had like as few touches as McTominay. Granted, United had 58% of the possession, but actually he had one more than McTominay. But it just showed that the midfield was just being bypassed, and we were keeping things outside and direct and everything, even though we were lacking our wing runners. Your Sanchos, your Rashfords, even Dan James, who's no longer here. Like that, this would have been a great game for him to thrive. And
RIP.
The game was just calling out for control in midfield, and possibly in Nemanja Matic, the same way that he came in against West Ham at the end and brought some control to midfield and also forward passing that created the goal. Okay. If you bring in the Nemanja Matic with your third sub, that's probably not going to get the job done because you still had no creativity up front. And if you would have done that before the Maguire sub, then you would have been screwed. But after the Maguire sub, you've got 8 minutes to go, and your decision is bring on a finisher to finish off all the chances that United aren't creating rather than a creator. And not only that, a finisher who is not good defense, is not good on set pieces. Cavani is very good defensively, but he is not good on set pieces. And what I found interesting the entire time rewatching this match, which they gave us weird commentators in the States. They gave us Andres Cantor and Robbie Earl.
Yep.
Which was weird, but it was different and it was good because Andres Cantor offered a lot of different things that you don't get from the regular match commentators. And Robbie Earl offers you like more of a studio perspective, which you don't usually get from the match commentators. And they kept focusing on Villa's set piece coach, who every time they had a set piece, he was standing right down there next to
they had a camera locked on him.
Dean Smith is their coach.
He's their manager. Yeah.
He was standing right down there next to him and they kept talking about it. And, Robbie Earl even mentioned how usually on these corners or on these set pieces, it's Tyrone Mings that goes towards the front post and makes that run. And it was interesting watching. This is before they take that set piece for the goal where United stick Cavani on this guy. And like, that's what a set piece coach does. A set piece coach goes, Edinson Cavani does not get into a lot of aerial duels. And the duels that he does get into, he does not win a lot of them at all. That's the guy you want to pick on. And making sure your team knows that, so that when Cavani's out there and he's guarding this guy, that's the man that they go for. That's the one who makes the run at the front post. That's the one that they pick on. And it worked.
Yep. Does that qualify as smash and grab at Old Trafford? Because I can't remember Villa having a whole lot of like great opportunities. They did.
They actually had a lot of great opportunities.
I might actually be mixing them up with West Ham. But West Ham also had a lot of really good opportunities against.
They had the Maguire back pass to De Gea.
Mm-hmm.
Where De Gea makes that save and credit. And what really impressed me about it, not just that he made the save, he made the save and then yelled at Harry Maguire. And and I think a year ago, not only does he not make the save, but like he'd be standing there with this dejected look on his face. Like, why the hell did you hang me out to dry? And what am I supposed to do about that? Versus this year, he made the save and then tore into Maguire being like, what the hell are you doing with that back pass?
Yeah.
They had another chance right before the Cavani sub. Everything was bad, and Ollie Watkins basically like did his knee in and just fell, and therefore did not get a shot off. And that was like should have been a goal.
That wasn't Watkins. It was Ramsey, I think.
Whatever it was. He did his knee in, and it was like bad.
Yeah,
it did not look great.
quick question before we move on to Villarreal. Are we worried that De Gea is only a good goalkeeper when the rest of Man United is bad?
No.
Okay.
He was good early in his, well, you know, that 2012-13 team wasn't that either.
De Gea is one of the few places I'm just not worried. I'm not even thinking about it at this point, to be honest. Like, I feel pretty secure with it. I do find it curious that Tom Heaton was on the bench
rather than Dino.
Yeah, because didn't Dino play in the midweek?
I didn't realize that.
Are we saving Dino's legs or something?
I didn't realize. You guys told me before the show. I didn't realize that Alex Telles wasn't on the bench either. I figured Telles was on the bench, and I just saw Diogo Dalot come on for Luke Shaw, and I was like, oh, that makes sense because Telles is garbage. He's trash.
Yeah, Dean Henderson started.
At least they're trying something different, but Dalot still just. Alex Telles and Luke Shaw, the only thing that they have in common is that they're left-footed. Alex Telles does none of the things that you want, that you're asking your left back to do. And yeah, there's so many issues with this match, starting with why Solskjaer took his tie off. And did he just walk into his office at halftime and say, I'm going to take this off for the second half? Or was it like a screaming fit at the players where he ripped it off for emphasis? And in which case, what was he yelling about? Because nothing changed in the second half. The only thing that changed was Paul Pogba went back to the left side, because after the Shaw injury, Pogba moved to the right and Greenwood went to the left. And they stayed that way for the end of the first half. And then they switched back in the second half and it was still just garbage. Complete garbage. And to answer your original question, yes, it's time to get Jadon Sancho into this 11, because if I hear one more person telling me he hasn't settled yet and he's been garbage. No, Jadon Sancho has been doing, other than shots, he hasn't gotten a lot of shots yet. But Jadon Sancho has been doing all of the things he did at Borussia Dortmund so far. He's doing he's doing everything that you would want for everything that you wanted him to do when you signed him. It just hasn't gone in the net or led to an assist yet. So it's not going to make the YouTube compilations. And when you watch the YouTube compilations, it's all goals and assists, but you've got to look beyond that. United didn't sign him because of YouTube compilations. They might have signed Alex Telles because of YouTube compilations. That's really the only argument. The only logic I see in signing Alex Telles so far has been they only scouted his YouTube compilations because he is garbage.
Yeah, I don't think league.
FIFA. He's an 84 rated left back with pace in FIFA.
He has no pace, no passing ability. He can hit a cross and that is it.
Well, we know that he's fast because he's from Liga NOS,
right?
As we know from watching Fast and Furious movies
over the summer.
Yeah,
caught up on the franchise, and he's dropping the knowledge.
There we go.
I love it.
I know some things from the mid 2000s.
Yeah, Alex Telles claiming to help Luke Shaw become a better left back is like when Vin Diesel said that he made The Rock a better actor.
Right, yeah, and that goes back to the so-and-so effect. People saying Luke Shaw got good because the Alex Telles effect. No, Luke Shaw was really good during Project Restart and pretty good before that. He just kept getting hurt. And last year he finally stopped getting hurt and it was, oh, hey, Luke Shaw's really good. It's not because they signed Alex Telles.
So what's our fear level going into Villarreal with Alex Telles and Diogo Dalot as our fullbacks?
Well, I mean, they'll be covering up for when Phil Jones gets subbed into the game at some point, so that'll be fun.
The thing about Alex Telles is if you can figure out a way to get the ball into the final third and then just let him cross the ball in for Ronaldo, that's not a bad idea. That can work. The thing about Alex Telles was on Wednesday, he was just hanging. It's if you extend the 18-yard line all the way to the touchlines, it was that was a force field. And it was oh no, I can't get deeper than that. It was I just have to hang out at the top corner and basically launch early crosses in. Don't ask me to overlap.
Yeah, it's been weird that of all the players we've signed in the last couple of years, who you would maybe expect to just run at someone even when it's ill-advised, it's probably Alex Telles. And we just haven't really seen him do that. He's been overly cautious on the ball when he does go forward.
He won't even run when you give him the ball in space. Like, if you pass him the ball at the halfway line and it's in transition and there's no one in front of him, he won't even carry it forward. He'll stop and turn towards the middle. Like, I described him last year as he's like, they signed him because we needed a backup. We needed a second left-footed left back. And for a left-footed left back, like, Alex Telles really plays like a right-footed left back.
Yeah. So Villarreal don't have Gerard Moreno. They usually play in a 4-4-2 kind of style formation. Going off of how the Europa League final went, we can, and you know, every other time we've played Villarreal in history, we can expect this to be a little bit of a bogged down match. I said when the group stage came out, or the group stage fixtures came out, that these matches had 0-0 and 1-1 written all over them. And, Polly, last week when I brought that up again, you said that that might be a little bit confident going into this one.
I was confident. Well, I was very confident in a 0-0 or 1-1 until Sean Maguire got hurt. Now the vibes are weird. It's less confident. Jadon Sancho's not playing right now. Who knows what our midfield is? I have no confidence in any of our midfielders with the exception of number 6, who is not playing well since the arrival of number 7 in that left wing role, because they just like the same spaces, and he played really well against Newcastle when he was deeper. Now that is Newcastle. Can't do that every week, but it might be where he has to play. And if it's a match where he's going to be a liability in that role, then perhaps you just don't play him. And I am the biggest Paul Pogba fan. I think he is the best player on our team all around. But perhaps that's what you have to do. Remember, Real Madrid, Zinedine Zidane, wasn't a very tactical manager, but figured out, said, hey, we have Cristiano Ronaldo. He can win us games because he's good enough to score out of nothing. And we just got to get him chances and make sure that we don't burn that. And he said, I can't play with Ronaldo and Bale. I need to bring in Isco and have extra energy in midfield to accommodate the fact that Ronaldo doesn't do any defending. And we're not going to try to – we have enough firepower to beat teams 4-0 or 4-1 or 4-2, but that's not going to work in Europe. We got to go 1-0 and just get Ronaldo the ball and get that match-winning – moment out of him, and he won 3 straight Champions Leagues by doing that. So sometimes it's you have to take a look and say, what is our best chance of success? And that might mean I gotta drop one of my best players. And I've got questions about Ollie right now, whether he's willing to do that, because either Ronaldo, again, the 2 subs that we had to use blew things, but like either Ronaldo or Bruno Fernandes had to come off the field on Sunday, and neither one ever was going to. And Mason Greenwood, frankly, he was playing pretty poorly. Do you think Ollie will take off a Cristiano Ronaldo after 70 minutes because he's just not bringing it today? Or do you think Ollie will sit there? And this is one of my fears about Ollie when it comes to Greenwood and Ronaldo and even Rashford, is that Ollie is a striker at heart, and he just sits there and goes, well, they're so good that if you just get them that one chance, they can convert it and we'll win. And he leaves them on at the expense of all the chances that you could have created if you just brought a creator on.
All I heard from Polly just now is we need to sign like 2016 Luka Modric.
Yeah, I mean, he would really help. But also, yeah, so to get back to Villarreal, Colin, they've played, what is this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They've played 8 matches. They have drawn 7 of them.
Jesus.
Hell yeah.
They beat...
This is bad for the vibes.
They beat Aiche. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing wrong. 4-1. That was last week. Midweek.
Oh, so they're in form right now.
And they can play on midweek. We cannot play on a weekday so far this season. They drew 1-1 with Chelsea in the Super Cup. Then they... 0-0, 0-0, then Atletico Madrid 2-2.
Wow. That is not the scoreline I would expect from
a barn burner.
Villarreal and Atletico Madrid. Then they followed that up with Atalanta 2-2. Then Mallorca, 0-0. Ecce, 4-1. Real Madrid, 0-0. So, like, this has 0-0 written all over it, even if we were fit. But, like, the vibes are so wrong right now. Your best hope is that Ronaldo can squeeze one in and we could win 1-0. But with Dalot, Tellez, and no Maguire back there, that is a dangerous back line.
It's kind of weird how in 2007, 2008, kind of early on when we started bad in the season and the way that we recovered was just kind of like winning 1-0 and putting Ronaldo in good positions to try and just like put one of those good chances away. Now we have the similar, let's just put Ronaldo in a good position to put chances away. No, but the vibes are much different.
He got that red card. So like we went three games without him, but it was like Nani hit that screamer against Tottenham and it was like that. Yes. I find it funny.
I mean, once we transitioned from like the 1-0 FC into the 4-1 FC, I think later in like October that season, was when Ronaldo and Rooney were back.
Right. And then if you go back and look and watch, around March, Fergie like threw a lasso around the team and reined them back in and said, all right, like we can't do this and win the Champions League and win the Premier League. And it became much more pragmatic. It was, all right, just go to Milan, go to Rome, get that result. Get that away victory, then do enough in the home leg. And in between at home domestically, it was just do enough to get the result. They lost like they only won three of their final six Premier League games that season. And they were not good. They were outpossessed in a lot of these games. They stopped getting as many shots. Like it was very much for a team built on countering and running. They weren't running as much. And Fergie was just trying to get them over the line and being very pragmatic, which is why I laughed so hard when fuckhead Luckhurst wrote that article this morning with the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer isn't managing like a United manager. And it's like, he very much is. When United lost 6-1 to City, like Fergie's response was get insanely pragmatic and methodical. And they railed off like five straight 1-0 victories until they got their structure back. And that's exactly what Ole did last year. He didn't get the 6-1-0 victories, but he became very pragmatic. And Walker's trying to be like, oh, that's, you know, he's too pragmatic and he should be more adventurous. And it's like, this is exactly what former United managers have done. You can now argue whether he's doing a good job at it, but he is doing what those managers did.
Yeah, I mean, being the historian on the podcast, even the 67-68 season, Busby's, you know, prioritization of Europe is what cost them the league ultimately down the end of that season. So, and also Dennis Law breaking his leg. But
he just pulls that out of the hat, but doesn't know the Marshall Mathers LP.
Right.
I do know much more about Sir Matt Busby than I do about Eminem.
That Dido song, because nobody who hears that Dido song thinks of Dido anymore.
Who?
It's the song that Eminem samples Dido in.
I don't listen to Eminem.
It's Eminem, Colin.
Nobody listens to Eminem anymore, but everybody knows that song. If I told you Lose Yourself, you'd know what that is.
Yeah, 8 Mile.
Okay.
There you go. B-Rabbit, yeah. Come on, you were an angsty white teen at one point, Colin. You're not far removed from that age, right?
Yeah, I listened to My Chemical Romance at that point. I didn't listen to Eminem. I didn't listen to rap until Kid Cudi, and my taste grew from there, which did not include Eminem.
It's understandable. Kid Cudi rules.
All right. I think that about does it. Does anyone have any closing remarks about Manchester United's upcoming games? I guess we have Everton at the weekend. We didn't really talk about that one, but that should also be an interesting game.
In regards to our upcoming games, to quote Werner Herzog, I would like to seize a baby.
The baby being Jadon Sancho.
Being Jadon Sancho.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really what it always got to figure it out. Figure it out. You've got Jadon Sancho, who's your team is crying out for some creativity and some pace and some counterattacking ability. I understand why Mason Greenwood has been in the 11 all these weeks. He was the best player on Wednesday night. He scored three in his first three, and you couldn't drop him from the team after that start, but he hasn't scored since Ronaldo arrived. He's not quite fitting in. It's time to give Jadon Sancho his run on the team and rotate him with Mason Greenwood. Figure it out.
See, this is the problem with financing a player and delaying your first payment like we are doing with Jadon Sancho. So I guess Ollie doesn't realize how much money that the Glazers are eventually on the hook for, but haven't really had to pay yet. So they're not going like, where's Sancho right now?
Yeah, right.
We paid all this money, put out Sancho.
You would think that they'd say that about Donny van de Beek. Oh, you forget Donny van de Beek was cheap, and there's a reason he was cheap.
Cheap.
You guys are also forgetting that the Glazers don't really care about Man United.
Yeah. Well,
they,
I mean,
they like shirts.
The Buccaneers did lose this weekend, so take that, Tom Brady. It's a cheater.
Matt Stafford is finally ascending to GOAT status. All right.
Is he in like his 15th year? Like, Matt Stafford is sleeping at this point.
Matt Stafford Renaissance.
Like the De Gea Renaissance.
That's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Auf Wiedersehen.